Moan Broadcast Center, this is Take 2, May Martinez. Our immune system is an amazing defense mechanism that handles almost anything, but COVID-19 causes it to overreact, which works against us. We'll hear the science behind why coronavirus can be an especially tough enemy to defeat. Plus, Maz Gibrani on whether quarantine comedy has a place right now, even when all of us can really use a laugh. It's all ahead on Take 2. Stay with us. From 89.3 KPCC, this is Take 2. I'm Martinez. Thanks for joining us today. It's another day of lockdowns and shutdowns and more unfortunate news. The Los Angeles County Health Department reported 50 new cases of COVID-19, the disease caused by the coronavirus. That takes us up to 144 cases total. Here's Director Barbara Ferrer during a press conference about an hour ago.
We anticipated that we would see new cases, and we will continue to see new cases as we increase our capacity to test. And as there are more people who are infected, there are more people who will get infected. This does not mean our efforts at social distancing are not working. If you look across the world, it generally takes between 3 and 4 weeks for us to see the fruit of our labors.
So what I hear there is really don't despair. There's just more work to do. And because we think it is important to maintain a good outlook and not dwell on the negative, we hope to bring you some bright spots in our shows, maybe even make you laugh a bit. So stay tuned later in the show for some wisdom from comedian Maz Gibrani.
Rather than putting your hands up and saying, no, I don't shake hands, just put your hands together, do a little bow and say hello. It's not as offensive. And people go, oh, this guy must do yoga. You know, so that's the way to go, man. I'm going to start bowing and just putting my hands together.
That's coming up at the end of the show. But first, in the age of the coronavirus, we do want to talk about our health, specifically our immune system. Matt Richtel has been reporting on all of this for the New York Times, and his most recent book is a good one titled An Elegant Defense, The Extraordinary New Science of the Immune System, A Tale in Four Lives, and it's now in paperback. Matt, welcome back to Take 2.
Thanks for having me.
Now, Matt, before we get into COVID-19 and our immune systems, I hear that you are sheltering in place in San Francisco, and considering that some of us here in LA are wondering if we're next, what is it like?
Well, I think the operative question is, do you have kids or not? If you don't have kids, I think it's like working at home. If you do have kids, it's like Barnum and Bailey meets an episode of Westworld. Can I have more lunch? Can I have less lunch? Can I have different lunch? Can I go outside? Can I download every video game / movie ever invented?
So it's almost like you want to run outside, Matt, but it's against the law. You can't.
Well, there's a quite confusing public message. My wife and I each got calls on our phones last night that said, as of midnight, this is a legal order to stay inside.
Okay.
And if you listened a little longer, it said you may walk your dog, you can go on a hike.
What?
I think it underscores a little bit of the confusion that many of us feel right now about what is scientifically necessary or medically necessary. I think that what they are trying to communicate is that to flatten this curve and keep our hospital systems from breaking, that we need as little spread as possible.
Yeah.
I know that is stating the complete obvious. They want us to do that by staying indoors, but they also realize it is, one, impractical, and two, maybe not even best for everyone's health or mental health broadly to do it. So they've created a stern warning with followed by a vast loophole.
Yeah, all right. Now, let's talk about the virus and the disease it causes. Since the most vulnerable population is people 65 and older, before we get to the immune system's response to COVID-19, why does the immune system fade, first of all? I mean, is it as simple as anything else that just wears down over time?
That is a part of it. The immune system gets out of balance at some point. If you've noticed, there seems to be a rise in autoimmune disorders as we age. It tries to attack as surgically, as carefully as possible. And when it does not, when it gets out of balance, you have autoimmune disorder, you have allergy. And for all those people who suffer what feels like mysterious pains, joint pain, occasional fever, GI issues, that oftentimes is bursts of inflammation, excessive immune responses.
So if you've got the immune system guarding against something, and then you've got an underlying condition on top of that, then it's too much to bear. Then it really goes out of whack, out of balance.
when the immune system finds itself swamped or swarmed, it can send off a really, really high response. In doing that, you can see immune cells die, or you can see essentially the whole system saying, this is not working, more, more, more.
Mm-hmm. So too much is bad in this case. It's life-threatening in this case.
Too much is bad almost all the time with the immune system.
What are we finding out about the very slow way COVID-19 attacks us?
You're referring to the fact that it looks like it sort of inches along. You may feel a little bit better. Then suddenly things get much worse. Then they can get really bad. And oftentimes it appears there's a recovery, sometimes not. You have essentially two responses when you are under attack. The first is called an innate response, an innate immune response. So imagine that you get pricked by a sliver, and it may give you some bacteria from a stick. You get a response from these innate responders. It's like EMTs. The EMT shows up, they stabilize you, but then they got to get you to the hospital for the real treatment. That real treatment, these are super precise soldiers or assassins, but they must be built in factories. They have to be identified by your body as fitting the disease and then brought up to speed. So in between that period when your innate response comes and does a kind of generic defense, there is a time period. That's when you're getting those factories up to speed. There are some diseases where it takes so long to get those factories up and running that it's in effect too late. But here's what's interesting about this. They call this the novel coronavirus.
Yeah.
The key word here is novel. We don't really have any built-in experience with this. So those factories are starting from zero.
Wow.
And meantime, the disease is really insinuating itself in your very delicate lungs.
So if the immune system, if our immune system is this factory that we're talking about, it, at the very least, we should have the factory up and running to its full capacity.
Yes. It might be weird to think about your government saying, try to keep your stress low and your sleep up. And you're like, oh, come on, don't nanny me.
Yeah.
In point of fact, it is so important, and it is based on science. When you are stressed, it takes resources away from your immune system. Would you like to picture yourself 10,000 years ago running from a lion?
Okay.
Now, you look like yourself, but you're hairier.
Yeah.
You're running. When you are running, your body is in fight or flight. On a chemical level, your body's sending off all these crazy, almost superpower hormones and neurochemicals to keep you surviving.
Yeah, react, adrenaline.
React,
yeah.
Survive.
Yeah.
When you do that, it shifts resources from your immune system. And hand in glove with this goes sleep. When you do not sleep, it also depresses your immune system because those very chemical functions are going on.
Let me ask you this, because this is where I think a lot of people, Matt, get confused or sometimes even misled. Why is supporting your immune system much more effective than trying to boost it?
Yeah, I feel upset with those people because it's misleading. If you had a boosted immune system, you might well swamp your body worse than the disease.
Right.
Here's the other reason it's misleading. You know Tony Fauci you keep seeing on TV?
Yes.
For the book I wrote, I spent a lot of time with him. He says, look, none of that stuff is proven. None of those vitamins or minerals that you read about, they may work anecdotally in some cases, but really it's about sleep, keeping your stress low, getting some exercise, and eating balanced.
Talking to Matt Richtel, his New York Times bestselling book is called An Elegant Defense, The Extraordinary New Science of the Immune System, that is now available on paperback. Matt, tell us about your friend Jason. He was the inspiration for writing the book and how he pretty much had a foot in the grave but made it back.
Check out this story. I had a buddy from high school in Colorado, Mr. Everything, All-State Baseball, All-State Basketball, got all the girls. And then a few years ago, unfortunately, he got cancer. And it was a kind of cancer that is supposed to be cured with chemo and radiation, but his was not. And so coming up about 4 years ago, he wound up with 15 pounds of lymphoma in his back, and it was doubling every few weeks. And his doctor in Denver, his oncologist, said, Jason, I love you, man, but it's time to go home and die. And Jason basically went into hospice. At the very last moment, he asked if he might take this off-label, not yet approved for market immunotherapy drug. The immunotherapy drug stimulates the immune system to fight cancer. He took it, nine toes in the grave. 2 weeks later, his girlfriend said, Jason, you've got to get out of bed. Your tumor has disappeared.
Wow.
So I said, well, look, I'm his buddy, and I'm a New York Times health and science reporter. Yep. I got to know what's going on with this immune system.
You know, I really like how you describe our immune system as not an attacking war machine, but more of a peacekeeping force. Matt, why do you think that if we can make that distinction, it can go a long way toward understanding what it actually does for us?
Because if we have a war machine, it can be incredibly destructive. And so tell me, we're on the phone together, but tell me what's around you right now. Is there a mic? Is there a...
Mic, a computer screen, a couple of screens.
Okay. On all that stuff are microbes, bacteria, virus, pathogen, and by the way, they're in your belly as well, your microbiome. If the immune system was a war machine, it would destroy everything around us and in us. It would be scorched earth and we'd be done for. So instead of trying to destroy everything, what the immune system is trying to do is constantly calibrate what is a real threat, what is not a real threat, and when something is a threat, how much to react. And the way it does that is by constantly testing itself, feeding itself with information. So I'm not encouraging you to do this, but let's say you touched your mic and wiped your nose. Please don't do that right now.
Yeah, but no.
If you did that, under ordinary circumstances, your immune system would get a kind of taste of what was in the environment, and it would do almost like constant experimentation and calibration. Is this a threat? Is it not a threat? If it doesn't get that training, it's as if your body, if you never went to the gym or you didn't brush your teeth, you would not be taking care of your immune system and letting it know how to react.
Let me ask you something, Matt, because we see on the news stores being sold out of everything. Hearing the number of cases of coronavirus spike. All of that is very stressful. It's just not easy to pretend it's not. And then you add on top of all of this, you know, the stress of getting flooded 24/7, 365 with digital information, all these lights that are keeping us up at night. We can't stop watching and hearing about all this. So that stress, lack of sleep, how have you been able to find balance? And what's the one big general takeaway that you want people to take from the book?
My one big general takeaway is that you have levers and they don't come in the form of magic pills. They come in the form of habits.
And those habits, according to Matt, include simple things like breathing, meditating, and exercising. That's Matt Richtel talking about his book, An Elegant Defense, The Extraordinary New Science of the Immune System, A Tale of Four Lives. It's now in paperback. As we've discussed, six Bay Area counties announced shelter-in-place orders for all residents Monday. That's the latest attempt to stop the spread of the deadly coronavirus. It's a move that's sure to drastically affect life there, including the life of KPCC listener Regina Honorato. Her family lives in the Bay, but Regina currently finds herself very far from home in a country that's been paralyzed by the virus. Here is her story.
My name is Regina Honorato. I am currently quarantined in my apartment in Milan, Italy. I'm stuck in here due to the ongoing coronavirus crisis and the national quarantine situation going on here. I've been here for about 3 weeks now, and we're all going to be stuck inside in the entire country up until April 3rd at the very earliest. Basically, the coronavirus got to Italy a few weeks ago, and it seemed, you know, scary, but pretty calm. And really, we just started working from home immediately. It wasn't even mandatory, but I elected to anyway. Now, it's basically full-on crisis mode, and the whole entire country is completely shut down. There's very, very limited mobility. No one can go outside. All sporting events are canceled. You need a permit to do anything at all. I'm passing the time by just working way, way, way too much and trying not to sink into too much anxiety. My mental health with this situation is okay. It's definitely very, very bizarre. I'm not really worried about myself because I've been in isolation for weeks now. It's more just this kind of general cosmic sense of doom that these situations bring about. It makes you realize how fragile the world is. Right now, even if I did want to return home, I don't know if I even could. Mobility and transportation is so limited here right now in Italy and in the rest of Europe that it might not even be possible.
That was KPCC listener Regina Honorato, who listens to KPCC on the NPR One app all the way from Italy. We want to know really how coronavirus is affecting your life. So if you'd like to share your story, we tell you how to do that on our Twitter. You can find us at Take Two. That's at Take Two. Now, all the reporting you've heard on coronavirus has been made possible by listeners just like you who've donated. Now, to keep this kind of fact-based, informative coverage possible, we need you to step up right now. Because normally, right about now, we would be mixing the news with our spring member drive, but that's been put on hold. You can still make a big difference, though, when you donate right now. You'll help unlock a $50,000 challenge and help us reach our goal without stopping the news. So give right now at kpcc.org. That's kpcc.org. And thanks. More Take Two coming up. Back now with more Take Two on 89.3 KPCC. I'm A. Martinez. To fight the spread of the coronavirus, Governor Gavin Newsom has instructed Californians 65 and older to isolate themselves at home. But what about the 20% of Californians in that age group who still have a job? Many older workers are now facing a very tough choice. Should they follow public health orders or keep working to make ends meet? KPCC reporter David Wagner has been covering what the coronavirus means for older workers. David, thanks for joining us.
Good to be here, eh?
Now, remind us, what exactly is the state of California telling people 65 and up to do right now?
Well, the governor has made it pretty clear that anyone 65 and older should stay at home and not leave the house unless it's absolutely necessary. And right now, that seems like pretty solid advice for all age groups. Officials say social distancing is going to help slow the spread of the virus no matter how old you are. But the governor did single out seniors because they're the ones most likely to fall seriously ill if they get the coronavirus.
Now, it's one thing to tell retirees who have people taking care of them to stay home, but what about seniors who still have to support themselves?
Exactly. So that's where this is going to get tricky. You might think it would be easier for people 65 and older to stay home. But actually, one in five Californians in that age group still has a job. Some might not be able to work from home, and some might need to keep working to get that income.
What do we know about these older workers? Why are they still working?
Well, we know that the percentage of seniors in the workforce has been rising in California over the last decade, and we know that many keep working because they can't afford retirement. Some keep working because it does have some benefits. You know, you get more social interaction at work, you get more mental engagement. But in a fast-moving public health crisis like the one we're dealing with right now, the fact that we have so many seniors in the workplace could also expose some of the most vulnerable people to infection. USC gerontology professor Kate Wilbur says, on the one hand, public health officials are telling older folks to stay home, but on the other hand, their employers may be telling them to keep coming to work.
There's lots of uncertainty, and there are definitely mixed messages. How do we ensure that people that are pretty much on the margin economically are safe?
Wilbur says this is going to be especially hard on low-wage workers who can't survive on Social Security and those in the gig economy who can't tap into unemployment benefits.
Were you able to ask any older workers how they're approaching the situation?
Yeah, one person I talked to is Barbara Lockridge. She's 67. She lives in Koreatown. And until recently, she was working as a crossing guard for the city of L.A. But she says when schools shut down last week,
they called me and told me, listen, you're going to finish up the afternoon, but the schools are closing and we're going to have to lay you off. I'm so sorry.
Now she's leaning into her other job, doing deliveries through Postmates.
Is it a good idea for her to keep driving all over town making deliveries right now, getting into contact maybe with some people?
Well, Lockridge says she does know that she's at higher risk of life-threatening illness if she contracts the virus due to her age and the fact that she's had chemotherapy in the past. But she says she really doesn't have a choice. She needs to keep working. She lives alone, and without the income, she says she couldn't afford her rent.
But is she taking any precautions to avoid getting sick?
She plans to wash her hands regularly and keep her distance from others. And when she's doing deliveries for Postmates, she says she's not greeting customers at their doors.
I don't interact with too many people. I pick up the package with gloves on. I drop them off at their front door. I don't talk to anybody.
Postmates has said it is setting up a relief fund for workers to help cover the cost of health expenses and sick leave related to the coronavirus. But when I asked them if they were offering any help specifically to their older workers, I didn't get a response.
Man, all right. Are employers doing anything to tell older workers to stay home?
Yeah, I mean, many are definitely telling their workers, both old and young, to work from home during this time. But some people can't work from home, like 71-year-old Delilah Tibson. She's a housekeeper at the Westin Bonaventure, and she told me she planned to show up for work today because she's still on the schedule.
They haven't called me and said, "But Delilah, you need to stay at home." But if they did, that sure would stay at home.
So some older workers are taking cues from their employers to keep coming in. Tibson says she likes working and she doesn't want to disrupt her daily routine or lose the income she needs to support herself.
Yeah, now it could be a long time before restrictions are lifted. What's the long-term outlook for some of these older workers?
Yeah, that's another tough question right now. I mean, workers of all ages are probably on edge during this time. But Paul Irving with the Milken Institute says older workers may be afraid of not just losing their jobs right now, but also not being able to find a new one once things get back to normal.
They suffer the risks of ageism in employment and oftentimes in reemployment. So if they leave their jobs, the prospect of being reemployed is that much more challenging for this population, particularly if the financial impacts of the coronavirus lead to recession, as I think is likely under the circumstances.
So bottom line, you know, this virus is a big risk to the health of older people, but it could also impact their finances more severely, too.
That's KPCC's David Wagner talking about the coronavirus and what it means for older workers. David, thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me.
We asked listeners yesterday about how they were talking to their senior parents about sheltering in place, and it turns out adult sons and daughters are having a tough time convincing their senior parents to stay inside. So we had a few of them recount their experience to us.
I've been having a huge challenge trying to convince my very active mother to reduce her activity. She has a chronic lung disease, and coronavirus would be extremely serious for her if she were to contract it. But yet she's still going to her exercise classes. She's still going to the supermarket. I've even resorted to having my 2-year-old son hold up handmade signs that say, like, "Stay home, Grandma," and sending her those, hoping that they work.
My parents are in their 60s and they live across the country in upstate New York. So while we can't be near each other during this pandemic, we are talking about it a lot. I did convince them not to go out after church on Sunday, but unfortunately, I can't convince them not to go to their jobs. They both work jobs that can't be done remotely. My mom works at a women's shelter and the women need her to be there every day. So they have to go to work and they promise they'd be careful, but I'm really worried that it's the asymptomatic carriers, the people without immunocompromised situations who could be passing it on to people like my parents, and they'll never know. So when we take this stuff seriously, it's for the sake of my parents and your parents and our grandparents. And the best thing we can do, because my parents have to go to work and they have to get paid and pay their bills, is I just send them links to articles as new information becomes available. And we're just hoping for the best.
So yesterday I took my 76-year-old mom to the hospital to get a cardiac test. This was in preparation for an upcoming surgery and there was kind of no way around it. So I needed to be there. So during the car ride, I was telling her how concerned I was about the possibility that I could be a carrier and she getting infected by the virus and being a high-risk candidate. She said that she wasn't really worried about it and that she'd been reflecting on her life. And if her life had been all used up, then so be it. And it was my turn. I thought that was a really interesting reflection by my mom. A little scary, a little sad, but also okay.
Those were listeners Katie Karutz Uyoa, Ashley Carey, and Marty DeLima telling us about how they've been talking to their senior parents about sheltering in place. As LA County goes, so goes Orange County. The number of COVID-19 cases has increased to 22 people, and four of those cases are believed to have been spread through the community, according to the Orange County Healthcare Agency. And earlier this morning, officials there said they plan to order bars and restaurants to close their doors. Nick Gerda has been covering all this for the nonprofit news service, The Voice of OC. Nick, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
And we were just talking about this yesterday. So what are the new rules?
Yeah. Yeah. So essentially what we just found out this morning is that Orange County officials are planning on issuing a health order somewhat modeled after the Bay Area orders that went out yesterday. It's unclear at this point if Orange County will go as far as the Bay Area in sort of directing people to stay at home with potential threat of criminal enforcement if they go out for non-essential things. So the Bay Area orders do allow people to get food and essential supplies and even take their dog for a walk. But in Orange County, it's what we do know is that it will be an order banning people from having any kind of public or private gatherings. They're really trying to rely on cooperation, the cooperative spirit from the public. But there will be technically an ability to do criminal or civil enforcement if the order is violated under the laws.
Now, when will this go into effect? I know that some people were expecting to celebrate St. Patrick's Day in Orange County tonight, for better or worse. Will that happen? I got a feeling probably not.
Yeah, I mean, essentially under this order, the bars will have to close their doors. Restaurants will not be allowed to have any in-person dining. Now, what we did see yesterday from the Bay Area is the order technically took effect at midnight after it was issued. So it's a little unclear the timing in Orange County at when that order will take effect. But they're essentially, for the sake of public health, the message is, you know, really try to avoid public gatherings and keep 6 feet distance from people. But yeah, still TBD on the timing of it. And just to be clear, too, that there will be pickup of food and deliveries will still be allowed under the planned order.
So just like LA County, yeah, just like the neighbors to the north right there. And considering that we are neighbors, mm-hmm. LA and Orange County are right next to each other, I'm wondering
Indeed.
How people are
Indeed.
Responding to all this down there, considering that this just happened in LA.
Yeah, it's a lot of, you know, mixed feelings, a lot of fears and concern, and then a lot of community coming together. We're seeing people take care of their seniors in their neighborhood, checking in, making calls to make sure they're okay, in some cases picking up food and delivering it to them. So there is some of a community spirit coming together. The Second Harvest Food Bank down in Irvine mentioned that they had need some food deliveries over the next few weeks to keep pace with supply and demand. And there's a call to action for volunteers, I think, at 3:30 today. And we're hearing a lot of interest from folks who want to help out their community. Obviously, there's the 6 foot distancing guidelines in effect, but a lot of interest in coming together as a community.
Well, it's good to know. There's a willingness, at the very least, Nick, of people wanting to help each other out.
Exactly. And a quick note, too, that the criminal courts and the civil courts did close today, but the state Supreme Court Chief Justice extended deadlines for filing cases. So that's how the courts are approaching it.
All right. That's Nick Gerda of The Voice of OC. Nick, thanks again.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, we have an important challenge today to help us raise the funding that we need to keep providing you with all this vital coverage of the coronavirus and everything else happening in the world. Be one of 300 members to donate by 5 p.m., and we will unlock a $50,000 challenge from board member Kathy Ward, and George Ward. Your donation and this huge challenge will go a long way to fund this public service, especially during these challenging times when all we need is information and facts. We need as much of it as possible, and especially since our spring member drive had to be postponed so we can keep providing that. So please give now at kpcc.org. That's kpcc.org, or call us at 866-888-5722. That's 866-888-5722. And thanks for Take Two coming right up. Back now with more Take 2 on 89.3 KPCC. I'm A. Martinez. More than 200 universities and colleges have either canceled in-person classes completely or postponed them until further notice, moving online to reach students. Last week, the University of Southern California extended remote instruction through April 14th until further notice. And that is exactly what Dr. Andrea Armani, professor of chemical engineering and materials science at USC, is doing. Dr. Armani, welcome to Take Two.
Welcome. Thank you for having me.
Now, doctor, first off, how are you doing right now? As a professor at USC, how are things going generally with everything going on?
Things are going well. USC is taking the basically same approach as, you know, most universities, which is to reduce activities, sending students home if they can go home. Dorms are still open and, you know, encouraging everybody to work from home if it's possible.
Now, what specific courses do you teach?
I teach an undergraduate nanomaterials class that's actually a lecture class and a lab class. So there is an in-person component that we're having to come up with a way to replicate at home.
First off, before we get to the lab component, because I want to ask you about that, when it comes to just reaching your students, what methods are you relying on right off the bat for that?
Email for a lot of it, and then texting for some of it. And then there's an online, like, announcement chat service through Blackboard. So basically all electronic, which I think the students are actually enjoying. I send messages in the morning and then I get responses also in the morning, but different time of morning, more like, you know, 11 p.m. to 3 a.m., whereas I'm sending emails 9 a.m. to noon. So it's working. Communication's happening.
Have you ever used these kinds of methods before, before everything has come down to reach students?
So I have for some of them. I'd never used the chat service, so this is new for me. But I know the students had chatted amongst themselves on the online chat system. So it's more me joining in their existing communication.
Yeah. How have you worked being a professor into joining the students on this Blackboard?
It was a little bit of a learning curve, but by a little bit, it took like 5 minutes.
Oh, okay.
So that wasn't so difficult. It was more just something I'd never had to do, right? And if you don't have to do something, you tend not to do it.
Yeah.
So that was pretty easy. The harder part was actually delivering the lectures. So delivering lectures in an all online format, you know, it's hard to engage. It's really easy to just talk. Mm-hmm. But then to actually get the students to engage in the reverse is much harder, because when you're watching a video online, usually you just watch, right? You don't actually have to like talk back to the screen.
Yeah.
And now I have to deliver content to them, but then also get them to ask questions back to me. And students tend to not want to do that. So trying to get that dual engagement is a lot harder.
In your lectures, doctor, how much of them involve seeing faces and kind of gauging how the lecture is going for you by seeing the faces of your students?
That is critical. Just like when you have a communication, you know, like a conversation with someone, you know, if they look confused, you know, that you clearly didn't do a good job explaining it, that just visual feedback is really important. And so not having that visual feedback, I've now started integrating in like online electronic polling questions. So every 3 or 4, you know, minutes, I'll have like an online polling question to make sure that the students are actually understanding the concept. If they aren't, then I'll go back. But integrating those kinds of interactive but yet electronic interactive questions has, you know, been very helpful. I would say that was actually the harder aspect of moving online.
Those visual cues, right, doctor? I mean, everyone thinks, well, not a big deal. It is absolutely a big deal.
Yes, it's very important. And as a professor, you have a certain energy when you're, you know, standing up in front of a classroom. You're teaching to people. Teaching to a computer screen just loses that. So trying to actually stay engaged in the material while teaching to a computer screen is a lot harder.
It's a performance, right? I mean, just like any stand-up comedian that goes up on stage, you are on stage in front of your students.
Right. And I'm very impressed with everybody who's on the radio. because I can imagine it's very hard.
You are too kind, Doctor. We're just on the radio. That's all we're doing here. You're actually teaching important stuff. We're talking to Dr. Andrea Armani, Professor of Chemical Engineering and Materials Science at USC. Now, Doctor, you mentioned the lab component. How does that work, considering that I don't imagine many students have labs in their apartments or dorms?
Right. That has been taking the majority of my time right now, is trying to come up with labs that students can do in their home with, you know, basically no supplies and no equipment. And most importantly, you know, if I give them supplies, they need to be supplies that they can actually use in their kitchen. The lab that we were supposed to do next week was going to be a lab on, you know, an injectable drug delivery system. And they were actually going to use like a drug mimic, and they were going to characterize it using this really expensive piece of equipment we have in our student lab. And so I had to come up with a different version of that lab. And we're now going to use Jell-O as the material. And they're going to characterize, you know, how effectively different colors can diffuse out of Jell-O if you put Jell-O in meat tenderizer, because meat tenderizer is an enzyme. So the basic concepts are the same, but Jell-O, meat tenderizer, food dye, they're all things you can have in your kitchen. The last thing we did on the last day before students left campus is we made little lab kits so that, you know, they didn't have to go out and find Jell-O, you know, in the middle of all the grocery store runs.
So yeah, that's another layer of all this that maybe people didn't anticipate. I wanted to ask you about one thing, though, when it comes to internet connections. A recent study found that 20% of students have trouble with basic needs, and so internet connection or maybe a computer breaking is one of them. And this disproportionately affects low-income students and students of color. So I'm wondering what the university is doing to ensure that all students can benefit from online courses equally?
So that was actually one of the questions, that was the first question I asked my student, was if everybody had a printer and if everybody was able to access the internet, and not everybody had a printer. Mm. So then I had to reconfigure my midterm such that it didn't need to be printed. So USC has actually taken a unique stance from, you know, other schools like MIT and Harvard. So USC is not forcing all students to go home. Students can stay on campus, they can stay in dorms if they want to. All of the food services are still happening. So if students want to remain on campus, they can. And a lot of students are, for example, international students, right? Like many students physically can't travel home, even if they wanted to. So that's kind of one approach that USC is taking to try to ensure access and just provide a safety net, right? Which is so important right now, just to give students, you know, a safe place to kind of weather out this global storm.
And a sense of community that we're all in this together, especially if everyone's on campus together. I think that strengthens those bonds. Generally, Doctor, do you think students are learning as much or close to it as they would in the classroom?
I think they're learning close to it. Mm-hmm. At the same time, I think just going through this experience, they're learning something more valuable, right? You can learn knowledge anytime, but going through this type of experience, they're going to learn just to value each other and to value life, which isn't something you can teach a student. It's something they have to experience. And so that, I think, is going to be more important than anything we could teach them in the classroom.
Dr. Andrea Armani, Professor of Chemical Engineering and Materials Science at USC. She has been teaching her courses remotely. Doctor, thank you very much for your insights.
Thank you very much for having me.
Whether you're a teacher, a small business, a parent stuck at home, or you just have something to say about your experience living in the age of COVID-19, please share your story with us. We got a link up on our Twitter account. It's at Take Two. That's at Take Two. I don't have to tell you, news is evolving constantly, and KPCC and NPR are committed to bringing you accurate, timely information, facts. We stand by facts. We live through facts. We're supposed to have a member drive this week, but our priority is to bring you coverage that matters of the coronavirus, of elections, and everything else happening in the world. But our operation still relies on member support. Today, when you donate to KPCC, be one of 300 members, we need to unlock a $50,000 challenge from board member Kathy Ward and George Ward. So please give us go online at kpcc.org. That's kpcc.org, or call us 866-888-5722. More Take Two coming up. back now with more Take 2 on 89.3 KPCC. I'm Amy Martinez. Last few days have been like nothing any of us have ever endured. But as I keep saying, we are all in it together. So with that, if laughter is indeed the best medicine, then sign us up for a big old dose. From time to time, we're going to be checking in with comedians, people who will hopefully be able to put a smile on our faces during these strange times. Maz Jobrani is Iranian, American, an Angeleno, and a dad. And you might know him from the Axis of Evil comedy group. Maz, welcome back to Take Two.
Hey, how are you?
Good, good, good. How are you?
I am fine. I'm, just getting used to this new life that we're leading for hopefully 2 weeks, maybe longer. We shall see.
Well, speaking of that, because I went to MazJobrani.com and I saw that if on the second weekend of April, I happen to be in the Denver, Colorado area, I can catch the funniest touring Iranian-American comedian on stage. So considering the news lately, what do you think the chances are that you'll be doing your stand-up routine in front of that crowd anytime soon?
Well, I think, that we're about to give you some breaking news. Ooh. I actually have to postpone those shows.
Wow.
So end of February, we started postponing or rescheduling shows. The first tour I had to reschedule, I had a stint going New Jersey, Ottawa, Toronto. And as you recall, this virus had hit Iran pretty hard and still has. And so some of the fans in Toronto had started contacting me saying, look, some of the people that are going to be coming to your show might have traveled recently to Iran. We don't know. We're not sure about coming to the show. So that's when we really started looking at it. And at that point, in all honesty, up in Canada, when we contacted the theaters, the measures hadn't gotten this extreme yet. It feels like it got really extreme really fast. And now we're looking into April and going, there's no way we're going to be doing shows by then. I mean, it makes sense. You know, what's interesting is with comedy, I always said comedy was recession proof. So after September 11th, people wanted to laugh. Yeah. So they still came out. After the economic crash, people still wanted to laugh. They came out. But now they can't come out. So even comedians are cooped up looking for an audience. It's like waiting for Godot, but waiting for an audience.
The Democratic debate that just happened between Sanders and Biden happened in front of no one. And a lot of people were saying how much more focused they seem. They weren't playing to the crowd. As a performer, is it possible to do what you do when no one's laughing right there in front of you?
It's very difficult for stand-up to be done without a crowd. I mean, that's why even when people are starting out, sometimes I have young comedians who think it's okay to just practice your stand-up in front of a mirror and that'll get you ready to go. But no, you need a live audience because there's a rhythm to it. There's a give and take with the audience. You got to listen to the audience and you need their approval, basically their laughter, to show you that the jokes you're doing are actually funny. I mean, I've done before this stuff. I would do some Instagram lives and people would throw questions at me as I'm talking to the camera, to my phone, and I would respond. So, and then you would say something funny and you would see those hearts go up, or you would see people, you know, send you smiley faces. So in a way, in a very strange way, we've already prepared for this social distancing comedy scene.
You might have just invented something there. Social distancing comedy scene.
Yeah, I'll start the club. Social distancing comedy club.
Everyone will be sitting, 6 feet away from each other in the club? Only like 10 people can fit in?
Listen, man, it's funny you say that because one of the biggest enemies of laughter is spreading people out. There's been times when I started out at the comedy store, there'd be nights when it was kind of a quieter night. And sometimes the doorman didn't know the concept of sitting people close to each other. So they would sit one person on one end of the room, another person on another end of the room. And it was just total death on stage because the laughter just would not ignite because these two weren't close enough to each other. So you would hear like a ha from one end and then a little bit later like a ha or nothing from the other end. So I learned early on, you need people close to each other. This is the comedy and coronavirus don't go well together. Not live comedy, at least.
Talking to stand-up comedian Maz Jobrani. Now, you launched a podcast called Back to School, where you talk to professors and other experts about all sorts of things. A project you started because your 10-year-old son had a question you could not answer. This week, you spoke to an epidemiologist. What did you ask and what did you find out?
Well, you know, I think I found out a lot of the stuff that I've been hearing. One of the things that's shocking is once in a while you'll go online and you'll see, like I heard Mayor Garcetti actually on NPR talking about he was coming home on Sunday and he saw people out in front of a church shaking hands, or you hear people that were going to bars and all that. So I felt like there's some people still either doubting what they're hearing or they're just not hearing it. So I think the more we can get experts on shows like mine or shows like yours or anywhere, just saying it over and over and over again, this is serious.
You know, in the podcast, you mentioned how Iran and Italy have had a lot of cases of coronavirus, and you mentioned how both have a culture of saying hello with a kiss the cheek. Americans historically have appreciated that firm handshake. All that changes forever now, right?
Absolutely. You know, my wife was born in India, and I'm telling her, I said, I think the Indians had it figured out a long time ago. You know, they do the hands together and the namaste kind of bow. And I said, you know, from now on,
no touching.
Don't touch them. As a matter of fact, we did a little on the podcast this week. We did a little role play with the host, one of the co-hosts, Caitlin. She says she's a germaphobe in general. So she said when someone comes at her with a handshake, even before all this, she would kind of put her hands up and go, no, I don't shake hands. And I said, all right, Caitlin, now let's try another version. Rather than putting your hands up and saying, no, I don't shake hands, just put your hands together, do a little bow and say hello. And when you do the bow and the hello, it's not as offensive. And people go, oh, this guy must do yoga, you know. So that's the way to go, man. I'm going to start bowing and just putting my hands together.
It's welcoming and sanitary all at the same time. I mentioned how your podcast was inspired by your curious kid. What have you told your kids about coronavirus?
So my son now is 11. My daughter is 9. And, you know, we've told them the basics with the washing the hands, the keeping the distance. We've told them that this is kind of a once-in-a-lifetime thing. I mean, it's never happened in my lifetime. One thing that I've been trying to have perspective myself is interesting is this idea of sympathy. You know, it's interesting. As Americans, we seem to have had, you know, we've had a pretty good, generally speaking. Obviously, we've had things like September 11th and we've had economic crashes. But you realize, you know, places like Syria where they had civil war and people had to get up and leave, you know, their lives were disrupted the way our lives have been disrupted, where you would say, oh, the sports team stopped playing, the courts stop working, you know, things are being blown up, you know, we have to leave. And I personally left Iran late 78 around the time of the revolution. And I remember there was curfews at night and I remember there were shutdowns. And so I hope that some people, I don't know, I think people right now are in such emergency mode where maybe they're not thinking as much about others, but I hope that we can encourage people to kind of open their eyes. And I do that with my kids as well, to just open your eyes to how there's less fortunate people around the world that have things like this happen to them. It's a hard experience, but next time there's a situation like a travel ban or there's anti-immigrant sentiment or whatever, maybe they'll think, oh, wow, these people are leaving situations like that time when I had to deal with the coronavirus. I'm hoping there's some people come out of it with some sympathy, including kids.
Now, Maz, I'm going to end with a big question, so bear with me on this. I used to work in sports radio, so when something serious was going on in the world, I was kind of part of the distraction for some people, but since I got into news, stand-up comedy has become my distraction when I'm not working. But, you know, right now life has been pulled in all kinds of different directions. I mean, no sports, concerts, comedy shows, at least for a while. So I want to set this up, Maz, by pointing out the way Mel Brooks described himself in the classic film History of the World Part 1.
Next, occupation.
Stand-up philosopher.
What?
Stand-up philosopher. I coalesce the vapor of human experience into a viable and logical comprehension.
Oh, a bullshit artist.
So, Maz, you are a stand-up philosopher in my eyes. You and everyone that does what you do. So, to end this on a somewhat positive note, or at least hopeful note, give us something to hold on to while we keep our distance from each other.
Just know that the BS philosophers are writing material. We're ready to make you laugh as soon as this thing's over. And it's going to be, you know, look at the places that have gotten through it, are getting through it. China, I think that's the only one I got. But basically, there's light at the end of the tunnel. And the other thing I will reiterate is, like, there's a beauty to slowing down for a minute, you know, going for hikes with your kids, keeping your distance, but going for hikes, spending time with the kids. You know, yesterday we also had the rain. And that was nice. I was just, you know, I actually took a little nap with the kids, which I haven't done in years since they were babies. So enjoy your families, enjoy your loved ones, wash your hands like you are an OR doctor. And I'll see you at the clubs in 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks. I don't know how many weeks.
That's comedian Maz Jobrani. You can find his Back to School podcast on Apple Podcasts. Maz, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
You heard Maz there. In addition to washing hands, enjoy your family, take a nap, go on a hike, with good social distancing, of course. Our earlier guest, Matt Richtel, suggested meditation, even with your children, as a means of coping with quarantine. My tip, especially if you're feeling the pressure of not being able to go to the gym, I know it sounds silly, but for some of us, it's our release. Do some push-ups. It's a classic calisthenic, but it really, really works. So what tips do you have for enduring these strange times? Tell us, and we'll share them on the radio on our website, las.org. Just call us 626-583-5281. Leave us a message at 626-583-5281. And by the way, just a little correction, the online classes at USC will continue past April 14th to end the semester on May 1st. That news has been updated since we recorded our conversation with the professor. Thanks for listening. Thanks for trusting us with your time. Take two. We'll be back tomorrow at 2. Talk to you then.